To most native Scandinavians, the Scandamania is both creepy and flattering. Buying acne jeans is one thing. Borrowing from their entire sociocultural fabric is borderline Ripley. Scandinavia, of course, is the sum of its snowy parts, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Finland, although we tend to lump their psyches together into one giant, social-democratic, sauna-loving landmass of smoked fish, dark nights, and trees. Good morning.
Good morning. So, who even writes that?
Questionable. It's in The Guardian. The Guardian. Have you heard of The Guardian?
It has gone past me sometimes.
The Guardian, yes. We have a newspaper in the UK. They write about things. They're obsessed with hygge at the moment.
You just have one newspaper?
Yeah, that's all we can afford. Belts have been tightened in this post-Brexit era.
Yeah, it seems to be like one article a month or something about Scandinavia.
Are you getting tired of this?
No, we love it, of course. As we have established, we love it when it's good to be seen from abroad.
We acknowledge your existence, Scandinavia. Mm. All three of you. Tiny, tiny land mass of tiny, tiny people where it's perpetually snowy.
It's snowy in Oslo?
It's always snowy. It's not snowy, it's slightly damp. I heard it was going to go up to 10 degrees this week in Oslo. That's wild.
That has never happened before. This must be a new record.
It's pretty amazing. I think it will be the first time in like probably at least 4 months that we've hit double digits in temperature. For American listeners, I guess we'll put in some kind of like link to the Celsius Fahrenheit conversion.
I guess we'll circle back to the Guardian piece, but well, here it rains.
Of course.
In other countries, I imagine it rains down like vertically,
broadly in line with gravity. Mm.
But if you add the weird phenomena wind.
Yes, but I thought that wasn't the kind of thing we would talk about on this program. Yeah.
Not that kind of wind.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I did yoga yesterday, so yeah, we could talk about that as well. But
did it include what I've learned from one of my colleagues is there's a thing called wind relieving pose. I did not know this until recently, but one of our colleagues informed me.
Well, we did this kind of sling training afterwards, and this was another type of slings, mind you, but it was lots of upside down stuff.
Wow.
It does wonders for your stomach,
I would think. Maybe not the other people in class. I'm sorry, we were going to move on. We can move on.
Yeah, so my point is, today it was raining like in 45 degrees. So, rain with an angle, I guess.
But having been doing sling training at an angle yesterday, you're completely okay with this, right?
I'm so confused now.
You don't know which way is up.
But you'll get wetter, that's the point.
Yeah. It seems like that would kind of go into all the clothing openings and just get everywhere.
And also it penetrated my shoe.
There is no bad weather, only bad clothing.
That's bullcrap.
It's a thing I learned from Scandinavians. Are you telling me it's not true?
Well, it seems that if you adhere to that advice, you haven't been out long enough, because it will always go through your clothing.
Eventually.
It's just a matter of time.
Right. The inevitability of wet.
So when I got my shoe wet this morning, which is some, it's perhaps the worst feeling, just when you sort of notice that the water has passed the ladder.
Right.
And but it reminded me about being out hiking, because if you go out in the nature for a while, and in Norway it mostly the ground will be somewhat wet, it will get a point where your shoe doesn't sort of keep the water on the outside. Man, my English is bad today. It's very verbose.
But the water resistance ceases to resist.
Yeah, thanks. And the feeling, so, like, we'll get to the point where you just think, ah, oh, heck, and now my feet is wet anyway, so you just, you don't mind anymore.
Right. What the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Acceptance.
I think that's the worst bit. It's like walking into a, if you get into the sea and it's cold, it's the kind of the foot equivalent of that moment when you're getting into the sea, when the water goes up past your stomach. If you can make that bit, you're fine.
But
it's...
The silver lining here is that when your feet is wet, then you don't have to sort of step carefully. You can just go on through the water like Moses. Or not like Moses. Moses would have dealt with that.
I was going to say Moses was like biblical Gore-Tex.
Also, he was most famous for walking in the desert, so I guess water wouldn't be a problem. But he had, that's weird, he had to go through an ocean to sort of hike in the desert.
So I think what we can agree...
It's almost biblical.
Right. I think what we can agree is he probably had absolute average exposure to water, just unevenly distributed compared to most people.
Is that like the bathroom? That's a new one.
Have we talked about the Marmite distribution?
No.
Have you ever tried Marmite?
What was that?
Have you ever tried Marmite? Do you know what Marmite is?
Is that like an ant mermaid?
Your grocery shopping experience in the UK, should you ever have one, will be very disappointing. Marmite is, it's a savoury spread. You put it on buttered toast. It's made of yeast. It sounds and looks awful. And you can divide pretty much everyone into people who really like it and people who really hate it. So the Marmite distribution is kind of the same as the bathtub distribution, I guess. Do not ever get in a bath of Marmite.
It sounds like a good recipe for wind. Spread made of yeast? Really?
Yeast extract, I believe. We had follow-up. Well, I say follow-up. There was an issue. We had cake in the office.
It wasn't a lie?
It was not a lie. The cake was real. And towards the end of the day, there was this one lonely slice sitting there. And Will posted a picture in Slack of this last lonely slice of cake, which nobody would take, with the kind of the sirens on saying English level politeness alert. And this is a thing in the UK. If there's one cookie or one slice of cake or one something, piece of food left on a plate that has had much more, no one will take it.
For context, Will is actually the token British person in the office.
What does that make me?
We don't know yet.
Interesting. Indeterminate.
But yeah, Sly's halftime. But didn't anyone sort of split it in two and take the one part?
Then you've got like Zeno's cake or something. Like people just keep splitting it in two, the and cake is never actually. Yes, the cake is never finished. You can just keep dividing it in two.
Life hack.
Indeed.
Because that seems to be, at least to me, a normal thing to do.
To just keep cutting it in half.
Yeah.
Is that a typical kind of Norwegian thing to do? Is don't, you know, you're not taking the last slice, you're just cutting it in half and saying, okay, I'll have a little bit. Someone else can have the last bit.
Well, after this Guardian article, I guess generalization is a free-for-all now. So, yeah, sure. That's a typical Norwegian thing to do. Cut the cake in half, always.
Is it often the case, though, that the last piece will sit for a long time?
Not with me around.
Okay.
The fact that I don't really know is perhaps an answer.
Okay. It's a very recognizable British phenomenon, I guess.
What happens to it, though?
Often it will sit there forever until, like, 2 days later, someone finally gets fed up and puts it away. At this point, it won't be worth eating, or it will have that kind of the thing that happens, like when you've got a last piece of something left out of politeness, is that it takes over into this is unclean and no one will touch it. And I don't know where the line is.
It doesn't sound very sustainable.
Like wasteful, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of stupid like that, I guess.
I guess 0.002% of climate change is due to excess cake in Britain.
Our cake, the European cake mountain. Well, we're opting out of the European cake mountain, actually, so we'll have to make our own cake mountain.
Yeah, but I think the procedure is to politely ask if you can have the honor of taking the last slice.
In this office, that would involve like going around and asking sort of 50 odd people.
You could just post an Allerslag. I'm taking
Does anyone
this
mind?
Deal with it.
Or I suppose you could stand next to it. I think that the British thing would perhaps be, if you really wanted that last bit, would be to stand next to it and say, does anyone, very quietly, does anyone mind if I just have this last piece? Even if there's no one in earshot. And then take it.
And I think, feel guilty, I guess.
Well, or we're British. It's what we do.
So, yeah. To summarize, if you are in Norway and see a last slice of cake, feel free to take it.
Or cut it in half.
Yeah. With your ostehøvel.
Indeed. I did have a question about slices. This is the thing that sometimes happens in our house. If the vegetable peeler is in the dishwasher, we use a brown cheese slicer to peel vegetables. Or just
Pardon?
The regular cheese slicers.
What did you say?
We use a brown cheese slicer to peel vegetables.
Right.
Are there people coming for me now? I'll pack up my things.
You were so close. Is it? Well, yeah, of course. I'm just kidding. Yeah, sure. My wife does that, actually. I don't do it because I use the proper equipment to peel vegetables. But, yeah, a vegetable peeler, for example.
For example?
I got this awesome washable peeler. It sort of, you can use it with either hand. So you can peel your vegetables cack-handedly.
That's not an appetizing phrase. Yeah. The peeling vegetables with a cheese slicer was born of necessity over the summer when we didn't have any of our kitchen things and we were in a rented apartment and I wanted to peel carrots. And in fact, using a cheese slicer to peel carrots is the best way to peel carrots. It's not very efficient with round vegetables, but like long vegetables, it is the business.
I invented a new way to slice carrots.
Is this the cooking show?
Yeah, and I will make a video because it's pretty awesome. And I can now peel like the outer layer of carrot in 3 seconds.
Okay, we need to see this video.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Watch this space.
And it does not involve a osthövel. What? Cheese. What's the English term for osthövel? It's not a cheese
slicer?
Cheese slicer, perhaps? Hmm. Anywho, yeah, that was interesting.
I've realised that's hard to follow up.
Yeah.
Let's talk some more about food. Alice Pratt wrote and told me about, I'm going to do a very bad job of this, it's supposed to be Danish.
Pardon? red porridge with cream.
Right. This is, I didn't know about this. Apparently this is a phrase that ostensibly was used as a shibboleth in World War II by the Danes to weed out potential Nazi spies, because it's a phrase that's very, very difficult to pronounce for non-native Danes. So they used to use it as a kind of a passcode, I guess. And if you couldn't pronounce it, I guess they all pointed at you and said, burn the witch or something.
Rågrød med fløte. That was a bit too north. Rågrød med fløte. Yeah. It's a hard one.
Yeah. I can see why.
Which reminds me, you know the British national anthem.
Just keep rubbing that one in, why don't you? What about it?
How? So the melody of that is actually a children's song in Norway, and the lyric is only rødgrøt med fløte på.
I feel like you're kidding me here. It does fit. Rødgrøt med fløte på. Yeah?
Yeah, and so on.
Wow. You're kidding me.
So when we first heard the British national anthem, we were... Oh, that's a real thing. That's a... That's someone's national pride there. Is that a fun fact?
That's the most fun fact I'm going to get this week. That's amazing. So all of this majesty and pomp and everything, and everyone in Norway is just thinking about porridge.
Yeah.
The stodginess quotient is bang on.
And I never had rødgrøt. Not with or without cream.
Is that because it's a Danish thing?
Perhaps.
You said fun fact. Fun fact. I'd never heard the phrase fun fact, I don't think, until moving to Norway, and I hear it constantly. The way that it's used here.
That was indeed a fun fact.
we like to be meta.
You never heard it before?
Well, maybe once or twice, but like here, I hear it every other week. Someone saying, fun fact, blah, blah, blah. And it's not just people in the office. I hear it on podcasts. I hear it when I speak to people outside the office. It's a thing. It's a huge thing. Where did this come from? And I should qualify this, that when Norwegians are talking, saying fun fact, blah, 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 they're saying fun fact in English. How did this start?
Do you think the fact is fun?
Sometimes. When people start in this company, they're asked to introduce themselves and give a fun fact.
And the fun to fact ratio is not that great, to be honest.
I think it errs more towards fact than fun often. I would have said pop fact, I guess. It's the same thing. I'm just intrigued by how universal it seems to be here. And it's often added kind of self-deprecatingly at the end of a thing. Like if someone has just come up with a slightly random end of a conversation and then there's this pause and then they'll say, fun fact.
I guess the genealogy of the fun fact in Norway, is this only in Norway or Scandinavia as a whole?
I haven't spent enough time anywhere else to hear it elsewhere. Swedes have never said it to me.
Well,
that's the pause. The pause says everything.
They wouldn't dare to use the F word anyways. But I guess it comes from this very popular radio / podcast called Radio Reception. The Radio Reception. Which have had a huge influence, I guess, on sort of the humor or day-to-day humorous speech, I guess. So they have all these concepts that floats through the Norwegian
ether.
Yeah, for example, checking if that is a thing that is allowed to say, hvis det er lov å si, comes from this program. And also fun fact, because they had this segment, sort of this weekly segment about fun facts. So I guess it was popularized through Radio Reception, and people would send in sort of fun facts that they read and discussed.
How long has the program been going?
For over 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. And how long has the fun fact thing been going?
Since 2010, I guess.
Okay.
From the wiki, because they have their own wiki.
Fun fact.
But we haven't had the critical discussion about what should qualify as a fun fact, because the funness is often, overpronounced, I guess.
Slightly ironically used, often. Mm. Yeah. Well, should a fun fact be fun? Or should we change it? Should it be a pop fact?
Like a popular fact?
Yeah, I guess, or like a kind of quickly encapsulated, that sense of pop, like pop psychology.
Because to me it sounds almost like what you would find at Snopes.com or something.
Mm.
Fun facts... is perhaps the fun facts should be true, there should be facts, and the fact that it is a fact should be fun.
Like something genuinely surprising.
Yeah,
I think when I was first asked for this, when I started working here, I was like, oh, what's actually fun, what's kind of really surprising and interesting? But I don't get the sense it's used like that. Do you know what's really fun is dissecting the word fun. People can't get enough of that.
Have you seen it in use elsewhere?
Fun fact.
No, the word fun.
I try not to use the word fun. Is there a Norwegian... I can't remember if you've talked about this before now. Is there a kind of, in Norwegian workplaces, a sense of enforced fun?
Yes.
Answer carefully.
I guess you missed that. The last time NatLife Research had some enforced fun was actually in London.
I am sorry.
And, well, it was an interesting affair, but...
Are you able to go into the specifics?
I'm afraid for calling people out, but...
Oh, then don't.
But yeah, well, we had this British event team, which I guess they do corporate jobs, sort of, to spice up and loosen up and stuff like that. And this hasn't so much to do with that we are from Norway, I guess, but only that we are a I struggle to find but so they had all these party games and they completely missed their audience. So people actually had to leave during this thing. I guess you have to ask Will or someone about this to get a more colorful retelling, but yeah.
Maybe off the air would be a good start.
It's pretty painful.
Wow. Yeah.
Very much enforced fun.
Mm. My impression, partly on the basis of what people have told me and partly based on my own observations, is that Norwegians are not huge on audience participation. Like, I think as a company we do okay, but generally...
I have this memory of Mike Montero, the raconteur from San Francisco, who tried to get a Norwegian audience to shout "fire him" from the stage and failed miserably.
That would seem to be going deep into kind of discomfort territory. For many reasons.
Yeah.
Like, it fails on the audience participation kind of aspect, and it fails on something that just seems so blatantly kind of bullying and, like, lacking in egalitarianism, right?
Yeah, and the fact that you can't really fire people in Norway. That's true. Well, if you lubricate us with some utepils and aquavit, we will... participate indeed.
Now, I see you've been reading this Guardian article, which does indeed talk about utepils, which is just having a beer outside, but it's nice to have a short name for it.
It's not just having a beer outside.
It's
acknowledging that the climate allows for having beers outside, which isn't a given in Norway.
I thought people drank outdoors year round. It's just about the amount of clothing you've got on.
Utepils would imply that you can sit outside for hours, but in later years we have sort of hacked around that problem because we have this heaters outside and
right.
Blankets.
Right. You notice there how I did not step in and tell you what the word was, and that's in part because I read this piece this week. Which is about the differences in communication between people in the Nordic countries and Americans. And I'm aware that in the excitement of a conversation, I'm often very quick to jump in. And I read this piece and I was just mortified, even though I'm not even American, I was just completely mortified by the description therein of the difference between... people having a conversation in Norway, where there's a lot of kind of, in Scandinavia generally, where there's a lot of pauses. And people reflect. And nobody jumps in.
Well, Just to clarify, when I pause, it's not a reflection. I have to think this through to enable to come with an intelligible answer. It's just panic. What was the word? I don't remember. I'm bad English. Help. So to step in would be appreciated, actually, for this participant, at least.
In that context. Noted.
I guess... Reflection. There will be more pauses in Scandinavian conversation.
Do you notice... let's talk about Americans, I guess, because this article is about Americans. Do you notice that Americans don't allow pauses in conversation relative to...
Yes, somewhat. I just made some space for the Americans out there to rage, to finish the rage.
Yeah. Or something. Are we done? Is that the rage pause over?
Well, now I assume that they would be enraged by. Well, perhaps they think their way is better. I don't know.
I do notice about meetings here when something is being discussed that I'm the most likely person to inadvertently interrupt, even though I try really hard not to.
Is that due to your Britishness or to your eagerness?
Yes.
Is that something that goes hand in hand?
I don't know. I have really poor short-term memory, and what that means is that if I want to get a point across before the conversation has moved on, I almost have to interrupt because I'm not going to be able to remember it in 2 minutes.
There is this technology called a pencil and paper.
Sometimes I have to use that. If you see me typing furiously in a meeting, it's usually because I have to write something down, otherwise I'm just going to forget it. But like in 5 minutes, whenever, when I get a chance to contribute, it will no longer be relevant.
That's your fear, at least.
It's often true.
But you could always... You have to be an agent in your own meeting, right? So you can always sort of circle back to what you wanted to discuss.
I do occasionally. Mm. Often I try and work out whether it's actually still relevant or whether the conversation is genuinely enriched by this thing that was relevant 5 minutes ago. And often I decide that it probably wasn't. I'm trying to think about the British equivalent of this article and whether Brits are more likely to interrupt each other or kind of jump straight into the spaces. Certainly my impression in Norway has been that there can be very long pauses and everyone just sits and reflects on a thing. And maybe a few people will say, and then maybe the conversation will move on.
How does that make you feel?
Like people are thinking about it. I like the time and the space given for the consideration. Also, what are you, my shrink?
but do you get impatient? Sort of,
No.
Oh, come on, I'll move on.
Not remotely. In the way that one often appreciates in other people qualities that one doesn't have oneself, I really like, as someone who is kind of impatient and very keen to move forward, I really like listening to other people consider something and be slow and contemplative about it. It's a thing that I appreciate in other people.
So now that we have made sort of this grand impression of Norwegians being very reflective and intellectual and mostly silent, fun fact, it isn't reflection, it's just dead airspace. And people waiting for someone to have thoughts of something that you don't, so you don't have to.
So it's sort of buck passing.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of waiting for someone to take that last slice of cake, isn't it?
Yes, and. Yeah, well, but I think we are moving away from that. I think we are getting this influence from abroad. And there's more filler talk.
Like meaningless kind of small talk stuff.
Yeah, and I guess the Jantelov has something to do with this as well, perhaps. Who are you to talk? And so on.
Ah, so breaking the silence is a kind of a violation of Jantelov. It's kind of, who do you think you are to just start talking and having an opinion?
Exactly.
I don't know. I like humility. It seems like a positive thing to encourage. But not at the cost of universal tacit silence, disapproval, conformity, blah. I'm just going to throw nouns, abstract nouns around.
Yeah. Apropos, I saw you strike out the point in the episode notes where I have written rant.
Right.
Because you got mad. You got mad at the Norwegian company that failed you. And you don't want to talk about it. Why?
Partly because I think beyond the initial 30 seconds of blowing off steam, ranting about poor customer service is like one of those kind of Luxus Problem kind of things. Like it's just, you know, first world problem kind of shit. I'm not sure anyone listening to this needs to listen to me ranting about crappy customer service experience, because I'm sure they all know what it is and I can probably improve their day better in other ways.
Because I wondered if a crappy customer experience were somewhat different in Norway than in the UK.
Not discernibly.
It's the same crap.
It's basically the same crap, yeah. It's like support functions that don't work, telephone support helpline things that cut you off. It was exactly the same.
Because did you talk with someone?
Oh, I tried. I tried pretty hard.
Because when you listen to, I guess, at least American customer service, they have the thing that you can have a very bad customer service experience, but it's still got this layer of politeness.
Right.
I'm sorry, I can't help you, sir. No, also right. We can, like that. Is it the same in the UK?
I would say that there's less superficial politeness in the UK in customer service. If they can't help you, they genuinely sound apologetic, but you get less of the, not none, but you, I think you get slightly less of the sort of, I'm sorry, we can't help you today. Thank you so much for your custom kind of stuff that is just guaranteed to enrage further. I think you maybe get slightly less of that in the UK. I haven't really come across any of that in Norway. Like if someone couldn't help me with the thing, they were just kind of directly, you know, they were pretty straight up about it.
Yeah, because, it very much depends on the person you talk to, I guess. But I don't think we have that layer of politeness. If you can have some pretty enraging for the right reasons, like people actually not being helpful and rude and like yeah. Obviously tired from the job and so on.
Right. I mean, I also worked in a couple of customer service jobs.
I'm so sorry.
At one point or another. And one of the things that did for me was to, that was quite a sincere apology, well, or a statement of sympathy. Thank you. That was well done. One of the things that it did for me is to teach me that there is no point in yelling at the person on the end of the phone because they can't help you. And it's not their fault. And they're trying, but probably they're highly limited by the IT system that's being used or by complete lack of knowledge about what is actually the problem or whatever. So it made me have the perhaps desirable effect of making me extremely polite with customer service people, because I know what a shitty job it is and it's not well paid enough.
And that was the empathy hour with Chris and Knut. Yeah, I have the same thing for clerks in grocery shops and so on, because I was one.
Mm.
So, yeah. But also, you know what they can do. And if they don't do that, then rage.
Is it because you were a jerk that they don't do that, though?
No.
Or is it because they're a jerk?
Because they don't know their job. I almost reached on the other side to enter the code for the vegetable one time. Almost. Just let me clerk-splaining, I guess.
Oh, that's great. I guess well done for not doing that. There's probably very little that's more disempowering to someone in that job than a customer just going, like, just give me that thing, would you?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you want to talk about cultural picks of the week?
Sure. I guess this is the show where we didn't prepare. Or I didn't.
Welcome to Small Differences, your favorite cultural exchange program where we never remember to do our homework.
I wonder if that has something to do with us recording on a Monday.
I'm watching YouTube.
Yeah, you do. So, for people who don't know, Chris isn't on Facebook.
That's right.
So you completely missed this meme on Facebook. It was shared many times yesterday. And it is a British comedian, Tracy Ullman.
Ullman.
We had her show. It aired on Norwegian TV like 20 years ago, I guess. But yeah, so she mostly does characters, I guess. And in this sketch, spoiler warning, you have this setup where, I guess, the genders are switched somewhat. So I guess you just have to watch that. But the reason I picked that wasn't only because it proves a point, I guess, but last week in Norway we had this radio host, and she asked sort of men on the red carpet questions that women usually are asked.
Right.
Like, not what are you wearing, but who are you wearing, and so on. And how do you combine this career with a family, and so on. And the results were pretty daunting. So they felt really uncomfortable and weirded out. And this is kind of the same thing. So we didn't talk about Women's Day.
No.
Should we do a whole episode on Norwegian gender or Norwegian and gender? I don't know. But let's table that.
Okay.
Women can wait.
Well, we're used to it.
But yeah, so at least to mark that it isn't a holiday, but it's a what do you call it?
International Women's Day. I don't know, some kind of celebratory day, isn't right? I don't know what to call it because it isn't. You're right. It's not a holiday.
And I got this in this dilemma because in Norway, people congratulate each other on Women's Day. Which is sort of a weird thing to do, but, well, you appreciate what sort of the message. But Yeah, I don't know.
That's so nice. No one has ever congratulated me on International Women's Day. That's delightful.
Next year I will.
Thank you. Does everyone congratulate everyone? Like, I presume women are the ones being congratulated, but do men do it? Do women do it? What?
Well, and this made me, so this is why I'm sort of weirded out by it, because it's usually men congratulating women on sort of their day.
Hmm.
But this is the day where we sort of raise awareness and mark the fact that we should be equal and so on. So, I don't know.
How, out of interest, what do people say? Do they say gratulere med dagen? Or?
Yeah.
Huh. Hmm. This has never happened to me in the UK, so chalk that up as a small difference.
I don't have a chalkboard.
Metaphorical chalk, digital chalk. We'll figure something out. That's a black door behind you. Just get some chalk.
Right. Your cultural pick of the week?
Well, I'm cheating a little bit. My cultural pick of the week is the same as my word of the week, which is Cedar Mall. And I got to this because I read a piece in Aftenposten, which is one of the newspapers here, which is it's written in anger, not unreasonably so. We'll link to it, but it isn't. I warn you, it is in Norwegian, and it's written in Nynorsk. And it's written by someone who is really cheesed because as a writer of Nynorsk, as like someone who writes in Nynorsk as their first language, they're really frustrated by how little material is actually available to them in their mother tongue. And one of the things that is mentioned is that there is actually more English that she, it is a she, right? Thea?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. One of the things that she mentions is how that actually, if she, just in the course of her day, she reads more English than her own first language, because the majority of things in Norwegian are written in bokmål, and the majority of things that are subtitled on NRK are in bokmål. And so the entire piece is written quite well, but also kind of quite, she's quite ticked off by how little she is able to read in her own language. If she goes to the library, it's hard to find stuff that's good and relevant. And yeah, she's just worried about it. And she's like, this is not fair. Where's that kind of nominal equal footing that Nynorsk and bokmål are supposed to have? And Sidemål it's really hard to translate. Like, it's the your side language, right? It's your, when you're in school and you get the choice to prioritise one or the other written form of Norwegian, if you chose bokmål, then your sidemål would be Nynorsk and vice versa.
Yeah, so we have discussed this a bit earlier on, but it is complex. So the reason Sidemål is a thing is that everyone has to learn both, and this is what makes me I have not decided on this piece, because it's not like the Sami people, for example. So even though Sami is actually an official language of Norway, everyone doesn't have to learn it. Mm. But if you are if one of the Sami languages, there are actually many, are your first language, it would be even sort of less to read.
Yeah.
And those Norwegian and the Sami languages are really different. They are from like completely different branch. I think the Sami language is mostly Finno-Ugric,
right,
or something.
Right, yeah. Which is like way, way other.
Yeah, yeah. So complaining about not having that much new Norwegian stuff to read, because she can easily read all the bokmål stuff. So she isn't cut off from literature, really. and New Norwegian and Bokmål. While it's different, it's not that different. It's closer to each other than, for example, Norwegian and Swedish, or Danish, perhaps even.
I think your point about the relative poverty of things available to speakers of Sami is extremely well taken, because they're basically screwed by the state, I would think, and by the by the general state of things. What about the idea, though, that if you are a writer of and reader of Nynorsk, that there's a kind of fundamental cultural identity in that?
It can be. So yeah, you are right. It's everything to do with the identity. And so you have a couple of people. you have this group in Norway that identifies really with using New Norwegian or Nynorsk. So this would be one of them, I guess.
Is it a homogenous group of people? Is it? Can you point to an area of the map? I've seen the map. We can link to it. There's a map that shows very clearly where Nynorsk and Bokmål are kind of preferred, and it's not clear cut. There's some areas of the country where both are widely used.
I guess if you, I guess they probably are from Sogn og Fjordane, and they are probably well educated. And they are probably not immigrants.
Right. I think she is from Sogn, actually. Yeah, she is. Mm. But the why do you say well-educated? Why would a user of Nynorsk be more well-educated than someone else?
Well, if you venture into to sort of being a Nynorsk lobbyist, I guess you will have interest for language.
If you're a lobbyist for anything, I guess.
and those people have usually gone to higher education.
Hmm.
But it is not a rule. But I guess also it somewhat overlaps with the left wing political side as well, so it's entangled in this political stuff.
Right. I was trying to think about the British equivalent of this, because there isn't really one. Obviously, we only have one written form of the language that's kind of acceptable. In Scotland, you've also got Gaelic, which I think people are trying to bring back, but it's not in any way widely spoken. But what you do have is accent. And people who speak in less dialect and more kind of Scots-ish, kind of, a lot of people, I guess, use a vocabulary that is sort of a dialect, and the kind of thinner, maybe, version of sort of Scots language, kind of. And it made me wonder, if people wrote that, if everyone who uses that kind of language in Scotland wrote like that, and then they were only getting a fraction of the kind of literature and subtitling in that script, what would that be like? And it would be a huge, it would be perceived, partly because of Scotland's history, I guess, but it would be perceived as a huge cultural slight. It would be like, you're not catering to our national identity, I think. I'm speculating wildly here, but I'm just trying to look for a parallel.
What about the Welsh?
Yeah, that's a whole thing. So in Wales, English and Welsh are both accepted languages, and you have to... all transactions can go in either. And I think if you wrote, I think we talked about this before, I think if you wrote to the Welsh government in Welsh, they would be obliged to respond in Welsh, for example. And yeah, I imagine there is a relative poverty of material available in Welsh compared to in English. But I haven't lived there. My grandparents lived there for a while. So I can't really speak to it. But that's maybe a better comparison.
Yeah, it seems so. Do you got this Welsh youth group that advocates the Welsh language, having Harry Potter translated into Welsh, which would be a much larger book, I guess, larger volume.
I I think the key difference is that Welsh is only on an equal footing within Wales, whereas in Norway, Bokmål and Nynorsk go for the whole country. They're both official written forms across the entire country.
Isn't Wales its own country?
Oh boy. It's its own nation inside a country. Trapped, one might say, inside a country. Stuck on the side of a country that doesn't give a rat's ass about it.
Next time I will give the freedom speech in Welsh.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. I would imagine that we will sort of come back to the CDMOL issue.
I would think.
With you later.
I see what you did there. That was... you corrected yourself from talking like an ordinary British person into sounding like someone on the BBC.
I try. So you combined your cultural pick and word of the week, which leaves my word of the week. And apropos the International Women's Day, I picked the word kulturkjæring.
What does it mean?
Can we have your sort of naive translation first?
I don't know kjæring. I would hazard that it's got something to do with cutting or clipping or shearing or in some way cutting off. But I could be wrong. So... some kind of exclusion, cultural exclusion, even though I know that this is not the word for exclusion, that's something else.
So, chatting, so I don't necessarily endorse this word, but chatting is somewhat equivalent to the English word crone. So it's somewhat derogatory. you wouldn't call someone a chatting without reason.
I've just realised why you wrote this down, because Kulturmann was in the Guardian list, right?
Indeed.
Right.
Or Dylan Mann or something.
In this context, is it more like Maven, which I think traditionally describes a woman, but... like, if you're a social media maven, you're kind of experienced and you know it, and... or is it a bit derogatory?
It's also complex, because chatting is not that unusual to call your wife in sort of the workplace context, if you have a sort of a blue-collar job. And it isn't really necessarily meant or intended derogatory. Because the etymology is someone you hold dear, charing, right? But it can also have this connotation of she being a nag, or yeah, someone at home busting your gripe, and so on. So, but kulturkjæring. It is this new word. I guess Knausgård actually made it.
Okay.
And it describes this woman in her late 40s, perhaps 50s, who attends all these literature seminars and wears big scarves and have short haircuts and, you know... And I don't remember his point, but it was something to do that he didn't necessarily write for them.
Right. It's a recognizable, rightly or wrongly, it's a recognizable stereotype. It's made me think of the word grollies, which is an acronym, which stands for Guardian Reader of Limited Intelligence in Ethnic Skirt. which is probably not totally dissimilar.
No, except for the intelligence, because it isn't...
It's not disparaging, right, of their intelligence.
No.
It's maybe disparaging of their age and gender, though.
And it wasn't Knausgård, but I guess someone who is similar, called Thomas Espedal. And he is... Yeah. He's a good writer.
Mm.
But you wouldn't be his friend.
Because...
Well, that's a bit disparaging, but...
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Fun to read. Wouldn't want to date / hang out with. Yeah. What should I read? What's the best Espedal?
The book about walking, actually. Hmm. It's pretty good.
Okay. Noted. Thank you.
It's called Walking, or Gå in Norwegian. And we will post a link to it, I guess.
Yeah.
And where can people find all the links? And I guess the link density of our show notes...
It's become...
It can't be higher.
No, I think the last episode topped out with like 67 links or something like that. Sorry about that. You are never compelled to follow them all, but they're there for completeness. I'm really not sure this episode is going to break even 40, actually, but they can, if you want to find the show notes and all the episodes and links to all the stuff that we talk about, you can go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm and enjoy yourself there. And by all means, leave us comments. By all means, have a look at the various words of the weeks, which are also listed there. And if you like the show, what can people do if they like the show?
Well, they can tell everyone. Tell your friends and enemies.
Especially your enemies. And make them listen.
If you are especially a Small Differences enthusiast, you can go into iTunes and give us some stars and even a review.
You can write in the review that you would like Knut to do more BBC English, if you want to.
I guess if you have to do a Norwegian episode, I will have to do an RP episode.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
But I have to go to RP boot camp or something.
Someone will yell at you in a very posh way. Drop and give me 10 push-ups right now!
Yeah, so I guess this was the show.
I guess this was the show.
I wanted to stop there, but it wouldn't be polite. So a proper sign off is due.
I would think so.
Ha det bra, takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.